Hi, everybody. Welcome to You're Missing Out. You might have noticed this one is titled a little differently. It's dubbed YMO 1.0. That's because with this coming weekend being 4th of July weekend, we decided to take a week off. You know, some folks don't have time for podcasts on 4th of July weekend, so no sense in dropping a totally new episode during this. However, some folks definitely have time for a podcast during a long weekend, so we didn't want to leave you high and dry. So what we are doing this week, we've done this before in our first season. Tom and I used to host a different podcast that had this name back in 2017, 2018, something like that.
Oh, it had, I mean, because this episode, Alec references John Wick 2, so it must have been 2017 when this was recorded.
Yeah, so
how long it actually lasted, I don't remember, but definitely around that time.
And so we used to host an old version of the show, and what we're going to do is we're putting up an old episode of the show, which features us from several years ago, sounding different, feeling different in very different places in our lives. But we're here now to give a bit of context so you aren't totally confused why you're hearing people that sound and act different. We've put up two of these before. If you go back to our first season, we put up an episode with Phyllis Gove about Babe, Pig in the City that we did, and we had an episode on the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Midnight Run, so you can find those if you want to check those out. This is the third one we're taking out of the proverbial You're Missing Out vault. In this episode, so the old format of the show, which yielded mixed success, was that Tom and I would pick films for one another that they hadn't seen. So Tom took a movie I hadn't seen, I had picked a movie he hadn't seen, that we felt the other person was missing out on, hence the title that we have. And the whole idea was we'd pick films for each other, talk about it, and then wrap up each segment talking about, I think the two questions were, you know, what are you going to remember from this film? And then if people haven't seen this, do you think they're missing out? In this case, we wanted to bring a guest on. I think this was the first time we had ever had a guest on the show, which is a person who has been on our show now, this version of the show, twice, Vice Victus. Folks have heard him talk about The Best Years of Our Lives and All Quiet on the Western Front, two Best Picture winners. The film he's talking about on this vintage episode is not a Best Picture winner. In fact, I'd have to check my sources, but I don't think it was nominated. I'm not sure.
No.
I don't think.
No. And if it was released in this decade, in the last 15 years, though, it's so bad it probably would have got nominated. I'm surprised it's a movie that Todd Phillips or one of the Farrelly brothers didn't make, because it's that just horrendous. And having to listen to this godforsaken episode about this godforsaken movie was truly like going back to save the prisoners of war in Rambo 2. Like, I'd erase this goddamn thing from my memory. And I had to relive it listening to this so we could record this intro, which also, by the way, it just hit me. We should have released the Elvis episode for 4th of July weekend because there's a new Elvis movie coming
out. That's true. That's true. But that one, I haven't revisited in a while, but is not fun to listen to at all.
But so that's but it's a good example of where we were and what's changed.
That's kind of the key thing with this old version of the show is one of the things we locked into when we were doing this with this new show, you know, this version, because we're dealing with the National Film Registry, is we held ourselves to the idea that, you know, one of our things we tell everybody when we do this is we're talking about not if, but why these films matter, that we have to approach it from a positive place. And it's our job to do the work to figure out why these films matter, even if on first viewing we don't like them. That was not a restriction on us in the earlier version of the show, which is why there are some very bad episodes that are just like us coming in and somebody just going, I don't know, I didn't like it. It's bad. We're done. You know, it wasn't, it didn't always yield to the best content. But when we were thinking about old episodes to put out, I thought this one was interesting, not just because, like Tom points out, and he's right, you know, to see the difference of where we're at in our lives. You know, we talk about on this episode, the three of us working together. At the time, we were all working together at a movie theater, and now all three of us are in careers that are decidedly not working behind a register or serving food.
Kyle also wasn't involved with the show at the time.
Kyle was not. This was so that's the biggest warning we should give up top. I think you're right. Kyle was not involved in the show. The original version was entirely self-produced. I was doing the editing and all of that, and
didn't give a shit about anything, and thus used much shittier
audio
equipment.
Awful. It sounds.
I mean,
so
I
bad.
I also just sound clearly like I don't fucking care.
Yeah,
like I listening to my voice, I'm like, holy shit! Like, do I sound like this on the current show? Because I really truly just sound like I don't care that like this is a recorded thing that I'm like I'm supposed to be trying to be entertaining. I just sound just so. I mean, listen. To be fair, the movie it is just truly like getting electrocuted on your nuts for like the 90 minutes that piece of shit is. Which again, in terms of like the new show and how we have to always find a way in, there is nothing with that. You'll listen to the episode and I think it takes us 45 minutes to get to talking about the movie because we're just talking about literally anything else we can think of.
Yeah.
And then when we get to the movie, we're talking about like, oh, what this movie could have meant if it was good. Oh, it could have been like Blade. It could have been like this, but it's worse than Spawn. It's worse than blah, blah, blah. And with just literally everything, it's just like, yeah, okay, I get it. But it's incompetent. It is bad. It is bad, bad, bad. Also, fuck you. You were too nice to Alec on this movie. You were trying to be like, oh, you know, I think it was okay. Like there was.
Put on a show. I was trying.
You could
to make
still
a
put
good
on
show.
A show and say, hey, why did you do this to us?
So this is the thing. This is the thing. Like my thing with the old show, and I think turned into this show. My thing that I turned into this show is that whenever we did this, and we would pick movies for each other, I always tried to bring to it, and I think my mentality on it was to always try and bring to it, like, okay, if this movie got picked by whoever it was, whether it was you or a guest, it got picked for a reason. Now, I didn't always like these films. I didn't always, you know, I can think of a couple where I was just like, oh, I don't enjoy this process, but I always tried to look for like, okay, but there's a reason that Tom picked this movie. You know, you wouldn't just pick a movie that you personally thought was mediocre. There's a reason that you picked it.
Well,
and I would
for
try
one
and
episode
find.
We did where we tried to hurt each other.
Well, yes, we did two of those actually, I think.
Did we?
Didn't we? I think
no,
so.
I think we just did one where it was, what was it? You picked
Spice
World
and
me.
Only God Forgives. Yeah.
Ah, that's right.
It was that I had you at Spice World and then I thought, okay. But in any event, I always tried to find like why this film got picked the same way we do it with the current show is like, why is this in the registry? I always find that more interesting in that way. So the fact that he picked this movie, I really wanted to get the heart of why. And what I say in the end about it being kind of like a TBS movie and that kind of thing, or a TNT movie, like I still feel that. I don't despise the film. So that was kind of how I approached it on that one, how I always tried to approach it on the show. Now, again, sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. And I think that, you know, that becomes a little more, that would sometimes be more challenging on some episodes than others. But I think that one of the things that I did enjoy when listening to this, you're right, we took a while to talk to the movie because we decided like the first half would be us just talking about Vice and his career. At that point, I would say at that point he was still building his online brand and his online following, which obviously has now flourished with the Action for Everyone podcast and everything like that. But at the time, you know, he wasn't really getting us. He didn't have a show of his own. He wasn't really talking about that as much and like what brought him to writing. So we really took advantage of that to get to talk about that.
It was weird going back listening to this stuff because we were talking about work and stuff, and just remembering that time period, you know, and how much better all of our lives are.
Yeah.
Like a year ago, your life was pretty shit, but then you got a good job. So like now we can all kind of rightly say everyone's in a better position than being, you know.
So without any further ado, everybody, here is our discussion from 2018 with Vice Victus about his pick for our old format of the show, 1996's Universal Soldier inspired film, Solo. Hope you guys enjoy it. We will be back with new episodes next week. So check back here next week. Jordan Beck is joining us again on the show to talk about Fantasia. So stick around for that.
Yeah, good luck with Solo, guys.
Happy 4th of July.
All right, guys. So we are here with a special guest this episode. Film writer Vice Victus. Read his work on a couple sites. You've probably seen him on Twitter. He had a gummy bear tweet that got stolen and went viral. It was a whole to-do. It was a whole scandal.
If you ever tried to re-explain to him on Twitter, he's probably said to suck his dictus.
I'm stealing that one.
And he's joining us now. We've wanted to get him on the show for a while. We're really happy. He picked the film this episode, and we're just going to take a little time to help those of you who don't know him get to know him. So do you want to give us, give the listeners a little background on who you are and how you got into this this particular world?
Yeah, so hello, everybody, once again. So where do I start? I guess the main thing was so I am a Army veteran of 12 years. I was in from 2003 to about 2016, so you know, 13 years really. And I've always been a big fan of movies. You know, they've always, and I've used movies since I got out to like kind of help process the stuff I went through. So kind of my, I guess you could say my niche in criticism is about is war films, but also stuff, you know, dealing with the black experience, quote unquote, because I'm black.
You might have said a lot of no one's gonna hear that. The way you said it, and it just sounds.
It's a secret. Like, you know, cause it's like one of those tricks. Like my voice sounds like, you know, like a white Steve Urkel. So if you hear me now, you know, I don't sound black, but I'm pretty dark. You know, it's all good though. Anyways, before I got out, I was in Afghanistan in 2012 or 2013, and I started. I was always an active commenter on certain websites. And at one point, there was a TV show that came out called Enlisted. It was a comedy on Fox Network about kind of like a Stripes light kind of thing. A hard-ass sergeant goes to a ate-up National Guard unit to kind of whip into shape. And all the friends that I knew on the website said, "Hey, we'd love to know what you think about this show." So I said, "Fuck it, I've got enough to do." Well, with 12-hour shifts in Afghanistan, the other 12 is kind of like dead air, so. I said, fuck it, I reviewed the whole series. So I did that, and I got a great response from Birth Movies Death, this website. So I got a great response from the fans and the staff. And they said, yeah, if you want to keep reviewing anything, just let us know, we'll do it. And so I did. You know, my first published review was the RoboCop remake. Which again, part of with my experience, you know, like watching a movie about, you know, PTSD and our wars overseas, while being overseas, kind of gives you a particular insight that's unusual for most, you know, film critics who are just like kind of academic. So I did that Then when I got out, I just kind of, you know, continued sharpening my skills, kind of going to a bunch of film festivals here and there. So I'm still doing that now. I'm also a student now as well, my GI Bill. So it's kind of been a balance between writing when I can, seeing films when I can, and keeping up my studies. But so far so good. I think it's been overall pretty good transition to the back into the world. Like I said, I'm watching movies and talking about them helps me do that.
Now I met you weirdly. It's kind of hard to say it that way because technically I met you through Tom, but Tom and I also both met you at the same time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Tom,
yeah,
you want to get into that story, just how we all know each other.
Well, it was basically just around the time Sony was continuing this rumor that they were going to make a Dark Tower movie. still never released, which is very weird. I've got photographic proof that they were trying to make it.
Yeah.
This has been his bit for years.
Yeah, I went down to, they were filming in Manhattan, and I was actually kind of recruited by one of the writers of BMD, one of the kind of now higher up, Scott Wampler, and basically recruited me to go down there and take some spy photos, because he too was a big Dark Tower guy, and he too wasn't, didn't believe this goddamn fallacy that there was a Dark Tower movie being made. Yeah, so I went down there to do that, and my friend Vice here reached out and was like, oh, I'm going to be in Manhattan the day you're doing this. We should meet up and, or I think it was maybe, we should meet up at some point. It wasn't the same day. It was actually a day I went to see John Carpenter perform his concert for the first time.
That's why I was trying to remember why we were together that day.
And so after the show, we went to a bar that was not too far from the concert, and we met up with Vice for the first time, which, is funny because you would have thought, oh, that would probably be the only time we met, blah, 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 because, you know, we live in Long Island and he's the guy on Twitter, and how many times are we going to end up actually meeting the guy? Cut to, I think at this point, four months later, we're working at the same place, Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn. And this guy apparently has been waiting 2 years to drop a goddamn bomb on me and ruin my fucking life by making me watch Solo.
The long game, my friend.
That's the long con.
We're gonna get into that in a bit. But
yeah, so that's how we all essentially ran into each other and kind of formed this little social circle we got.
Yeah.
That as through Kismet, or as the failed Dark Tower adaptation would have been, Ka is a wheel, and we all became this unfortunately doughy quartet.
And, you know, just out of that, it, even saying it out loud now, it does sound somewhat weird to say, oh, I met this guy on the internet. But for me, I've met quite a few friends, including my current associates in my new website, online first, and then we've had these rendezvous in real life, and then we've always hit it off. So, like, this is just a weird thing, like, a part of me getting back into the world is, like, forced myself to like meet people like in the ways I normally wouldn't have, and you know, as it turns out, it was one of the best things ever happened to me. You know, like I had a whole set of friends.
Because for a while, I mean, you know, you have an alias, you have an authorial name. It's you kind of maintained your anonymity in the writing world. So the only responses you were getting were through like comment section, things like that. How was that experience kind of coming at that as sort of
well. I'll say, first off, the reason I had the alias was being in the Army at the time, I was under the Uniform Corps of Military Justice, UCMJ. It's the military's own penal code, as it were. So, and one of those, you know, we don't have freedom of speech the same way you have constitutionally. So I was limited to what I could legally say if I were to write, you know, online or on social media or just in general. It's a pretty strict or stringent code. So I used the pen name just kind of to keep that at bay and speak freely without worrying about retribution. It also because it became he became me, or it's a weird thing to say because you know, for the longest time, you know, over a decade, I didn't use, when I referred to myself in my own mind, I wouldn't be my first name. I'd be Sergeant, my last name.
Yeah.
So my whole, you know, remaking my identity in the first place. And then kind of, I needed an outlet to do it again, like, or to like deal with that, I guess. So, you know, I have my government name, then I have my rank, and then my official name. And so the vice was just kind of a way to decompress and let up my creativity and just my freedom to speak how I wanted to. So with that though, I kind of got a pretty immediate positive response from other commenters and. You know, like I said, other editors and writers and other staff. I can't really explain how that happened. I guess, it kind of spoke for itself. But also, like I said, like I mentioned earlier, that my particular frame of reference kind of gives me a power or ability that most academic critics wouldn't have. And I don't mean that to just, you know, disparage them. You know, like you guys go to film school and have degrees in this shit. And of course, they're, you know, masters of writing and analysis, but you know, I was an intelligence analyst also, so I had that skill as well. I don't need a degree to improved my acumen. So I just kind of, you know, let it fly, and it, you know, and it stuck. But I keep the name now just because, for branding, but also just because, yeah, again, like, it's become who I am as well, you know?
Now, that's an interesting point. I think that's something I wanted to bring up, is that, I've said this to you before, because I'm honestly a fan of your writing anyway, you know, even if I didn't know you and I'd read it, but having a conversation with you is different than reading your writing. You write in a very different way, and I wonder if that's, do you think that's a matter of, like, well, this is what, do you ever think about it in a way of like, oh, this is what Vice Victus would say, as opposed to, like, this is what I would say in a conversation with somebody? Or do you feel that there's some kind of filter at which that goes through, or any kind of, because you mentioned it as a brand, as a kind of an idea, do you feel like that kind of has an effect on how you perceive things when it comes to certain assignments or certain works? Or
I relate this to a recent conversation I had on film Twitter about the black voice. So, like, a movie like Sorry to Bother You or Black Klansman, you know, it's about the central device is a black person kind of modulating their tone of voice, their phrasing, to kind of get ahead or achieve a goal. This is code switching, you know, what we commonly refer to it as. So you're hearing me now talk. Even from when I was growing up, I didn't sound the stereotypical way a black person sounds. So I kind of always had that in my mind that, like, I don't sound like anybody else. And also, as you can also probably tell, I talk very fast and kind of strangely. So it's my mind moves faster than my mouth can speak out. So over the years, as a writer, writing is probably why I come up a writer, not because it was kind of a by necessity. I needed a way to formulate and modulate my words properly to convey what I was trying to feel or trying to say. So it's kind of always been inside of me. Just that's how it expresses itself. So when I'm talking, it's I feel like, yeah, I don't feel different per se. I just feel like I'm changing channels, or I'm changing frequencies, modulations. Like, it's, but like, I'm not doing it to, like, appeal to different audiences as much as I'm trying to appeal to different emotions in myself. Like right now, as I'm speaking now, I'm trying to be as, I'm going to slow down and talk professionally, but then when something sets me off, I'm just going fucking crazy, because, like, that's how I feel. So that's how I want to say it. And it's the same way in my writing. Like, sometimes I'll, you know. In a recent article, I did MCU Best Ass Whoopings.
Let's.
Yeah, I did. In one sentence, I wrote, you know, the staccato frame rate. And the other, in the same paragraph, I wrote, you know, grab him by a scruff. Like, because that's my mind modulates up and down like that. So it's not, I wouldn't say I'm putting it on. It's just how I'm channeling my feelings, you know?
Now that leads me to something that I want to forget, which is and I don't know about Tom, obviously you can, you know, but my favorite thing that you do, and that if you guys do nothing else, seek this out at the end of every year, is the National Board with a Nail in It.
Oh yeah,
it's you know, we've done, you guys have heard us do kind of, we did our year end wrap up, everybody does their year end wrap up, and it's usually the same, and Tom and I think we're being kind of unique by doing, like, most, you know, best movies we saw this year that weren't from this year, or, like, you know, movies that were most disappointing or something like that, but this gentleman really kind of brings in his own categories with it, with the National
Yo, movie. Most year-end movie list is fucking boring. The same old sad white people movies, or the same old sad white lady, or the same old sad business entrepreneur guy, or some, what's the guy's name? He was Lincoln, and also the guy in the oil.
Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah, he's like 10 million people. It was always him. The Daily Lewis Award. The best guy Daily Lewis was this year. So the same bullshit. So my thing is, like, you know, I want to do, like, what makes you want to go to movies? Like, what makes you want to, like, what gets you pumped up, you know? And so one of my features is best ass whooping. And more often than not, like, a lot of the movies, it turns out, they're still the Academy caliber movies that they have fights in them. Like,
I remember one, and to give you credit on this, you are when it comes to this, you take it seriously, because, you know, you're really looking for the best ass whooping cinema. Because I remember we were talking about it, you were working on last year's, and I jokingly said, like, wow, but did you include Captain Underpants? And you sincerely told me, like, why, was there a good fight in that? Like, you would have watched it, you know, just to get it, as you take it seriously.
And the whole thing, like this year, the Academy, not, you know, they're gonna do best, you know, best picture and most popular. when people were like, you know, why don't you just put fucking best stunt person or best stunt coordinator? Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah,
there's so much fantastic choreography, like art in these combat scenes or these ice sequences. You know, Fury Road, like, you know, it was one example of like that was kind of a contender, but it was, that was some masterful stuff, you know, harking back to the old days. And now, you know, even so, yeah, like I feel like in the same wavelength of people saying we should appreciate best choreography, best stunt work, that's part of the best fight, because it's also, you need that to get the emotion out of you, you know? Like, John Wick wouldn't be, in John Wick 2 in this case, it wouldn't be as compelling if this time, well, you know, this time around, he has an actual villain who is his equal. And so, how do you show that? You have them fuck each other up. And it's amazing. It's like, you can't do that just by words alone. You have to show it. And they did it well. That's what I mean. Like, you gotta...
And even then, I mean, in that category, I remember we were having a conversation, in that category for best, you know, just to stay on best ass whooping for a bit, one of favorites, you didn't just include the John Wicks, you also included the brutal beatdown from Three Billboards. You talked about that because it was, in and of itself, I mean, but that's what I mean, you cast a wide net on that, because it wasn't just about, you know, you were just looking for something that was visceral and something that had an impact, and I think that was really, well, you know, a lot of people would write that off. Not to get into both of our, all three of our very different opinions on Three Billboards.
Fucking.
Listen,
we're not friends anymore. This is the time to start this shit.
I'm in enemy territory now.
Listen, it's good. We're in the majority now. Yeah. It's fine.
Well, you know, actually, that kind of goes to another topic. Like, in my topics, like, it just happens, the universe kind of conspires with you. Like, in that move, in that year, I put, like, you know, what does that say? The worst white cop savory movies or whatever. You know, it's that, and I forget. But you know, but opposed to it was the one with Lakeith Stanfield. So it's like, or for another example, in the same list or in the same year, but the worst Egyptian ruler who this is a human modern human.
The Mummy.
And the best one, which is Yu-Gi-Oh! Dark Dimensions. It's fucking crazy. Y'all, see, again, y'all think I'm lying. I'm being serious. You want to see some, like, acid trip level shit, watch the fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie. Because, first of all, you might have a new nostalgia trip. Then it's like, they're doing some, like, heavy level, like, what's going on?
Well, like, thing, you primarily, and that's the other thing that I think is interesting, is that, you're right, you primarily kind of get sent to write about, and you get sent to write about things that deal with either veterans or African-American issues.
Yeah.
But you
sometimes I want to wild out sometimes, you know? Like,
you're also a fan of Shaun the Sheep. It was one of my favorites from that year.
Oh,
like,
all right. This is, like, breaking news. Like, so this
you
year...
You Shaun the Sheep news?
Nah, well, yes and no. Shaun the Sheep, just so y'all know, audience out there in Ether, Shaun the Sheep is one of the most gangster-ass movies of the past decade. That motherfucking sheep and his crew was down to the death to get back to their mans. Like, you see,
love this movie. I'm not against it.
Y'all niggas think I'm joking, but I'm so serious. Like, it's, you know, it's about friendship and camaraderie, and, like, you know, getting together, get the job done, and bring your mans back. You know, be who you is, and all this stuff. And it's like, but you thought, oh, it's just a little kid show about the sheep. Nah, fuck that. Shaun the Sheep's man. So what I'm saying is, this year, once again, the stars have aligned. My new category, one of the main ones, beyond best swooping, will be most gangster ass movie of the year.
Okay.
Because we have been blessed.
Some gangster ass movies this year.
Yes, quite seriously. Started out strong too. Started out with Dead of Thieves. Which nobody thought, you know, this is bullshit. But no, it was fucking phenomenal. Some gangster ass.
You are the one that convinced me to go see that.
Like, well, I was already convinced to see it because one of, I think, at least me and Alec can usually roll with is Jacob Knight from BMD.
Yeah,
when he throws down his fucking seal of approval on a certified piece of trash, I'm like, all right, fuck it.
Yeah.
I mean, just recently, today, everybody's been fucking clowning on Mile 22. But he comes in, he's like, nah, it's fucking good. There's like 30 bad minutes in it with just a lot of stupid-ass Mark Wahlberg shit. But then when Iko Uwais starts laying the smack down and the guns start firing, this is a good fucking trashy-ass movie.
Yeah. I'll say this. I'm going to give that one a chance because, like, Peter Berg does great stuff when he wants to. But I feel like his ingenue, Marky Mark, fucks him up. I don't know.
Well,
what
his,
it is.
Well, I've liked the last three things they've done, even though Markey is clearly the thing that really handicaps Patriots Day.
Yeah.
I think Patriots Day is a good movie when he's not
exactly
on
that.
Screen.
Yeah. Or, you know, and then even, what was it, Last Man Standing? No, it was...
Lone Survivor.
Jesus Christ, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that, which I saw that in Afghanistan also, which is kind of weird.
It's also weird to think that movie's like 6 years old at this point.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah, you know, I saw that, and I'm like, this is a very harder to watch, you know, because, like, you know, when Ben Foster, spoilers, Jesus, when
I'm
Ben Foster,
sorry, that's more
yeah,
than a decade
they're
old
all, spoilers, they're all dead. They're like,
spoilers,
guys,
the time, even, I was going to say, you don't even need to put a spoiler on that. The title tells you that for a fact. Right off the bat.
And surprise, the guy who said he'd stop 9/11 if he was on the plane is not the one that dies.
Oh, God. Jesus.
But, yeah, like, in that movie, like, the character of X by Ben Foster, he does a brutal, horrible, nasty death. And I love it because, like, you really see that. Like, it's usually more like a... Well, in the same movie, what's that boy's name? He's... Whatever.
Marsh.
No, he's a...
Oh, Taylor Kitsch?
Yeah,
John Carter.
Yeah, John Carter, the face. Get the face. He dies, and it's very, like, it's very melodramatic, and like, oh, the angels. But, you know, because, to be sure, he's playing Mike Murphy, who got the Medal of Honor for his actions. But in the same film, and, you know, in a few scenes prior, or after, I forget, but Ben Foster's character, Axe, he dies horribly and nasty. It's like, that's the truth of war. Like, you know, that's the truth if you want, as far as you can on film, like, to show. This is not a glorified... It's not... glory at all. It's abject horror.
Well, that's one of the things that I think when Berg is on his game, and you see that most people don't really remember this because it's been a while, but he was like a Michael Mann protege.
Yeah.
And it's in shit like that, or in Patriots Day when Markey isn't on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even like Deepwater Horizon. He as much as he's known for being a dumb blockbuster action guy, he does the research. And he's not a guy that's very interested in glorifying violence. As much as his movies are big, loud, and kind of filled with violence, he kind of harkens back to an almost Peckinpah-esque way of like, I'm going to show you the violence, and I'm going to make it fucking hurt, because I've seen violence, and it's not fun.
Yeah.
And I think with your background, that's sort of a thing. You can also shut your mind off and watch some shit like Den of Thieves, where it's just kind of like stupid violence.
And back to that point, I see, even then,
there's some stuff where...
Yeah, in that film, you know, he's a former, like, I think he's a Marshal. He's, like, a former Special Forces Marine. And it's, like, it kind of goes unanswered how he made this turn to a career criminal. And, you know, to me, that was fascinating because, you know, it's, like, kind of a millennial mirror to Heat, where, you know, in that one, Pacino's character, he was a decorated Marine who became a cop. And so, like, it kind of informs his character. And in this one, it's, like, it's the opposite. It's, like, he's, you know, the scumbag cop is chasing him.
Yeah.
He's like, he's so professional and so slick and clean, but like, and he has this honorable past, but even when the characters say, you know, what happened to you? And it's like, to me, it's like, I want them to say it, but at the same time, like, it's obvious. What do you think would happen after fucking 17 years of war? Like, what would you think would happen to all of us after all this time of getting nothing in return for this? So like, it was a very fascinating thing to me to think about as much as fucking 50 Cent get shot up in the face, you know, like, it's...
Well, so what you're saying is there's an alternate timeline where Pablo Schreiber's character comes back from war and then just writes about martial arts movies. Is what you're saying.
Or you press Scott Atkins.
There's an alternate movie where it's...
Where he starts, where he starts terrorizing the girls, the boys trying to date 50 Cent's daughter by not seeing the new Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie.
He's just... They go to Pablo Schreiber, you want to rob this bank? No, I'm still going to watch some UFC, you know, replay fights on
that. After I watched Sean the Sheep.
Yeah.
Well, that just also goes to the thing. I feel like a lot of... Another thing about all of those old-ass, like, gangster movies and, like, the time with, like, Public Enemy Number 1, John Dillinger, bank robbery was, like, a big thing and, like, the mob was kind of coming up because of Prohibition. A lot of those motherfucking guys got started as soldiers. They came back. They had nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing to do, and they have been so inundated with violence. It's just... All right, well, if you're going to make me fucking poor because the country's in shambles and you taught me how to kill, fuck it.
What do you expect from me? Yeah, exactly.
I'm
going to
lead a life of crime. You gave me no safety net. It's sort of an extension of that. And I think that's the thing that kind of connected me and you a bit, and having now face-to-face working together, we connect more and more, is we like to sort of see some of the more deeper aspects of what a lot of other people would say is just, like, bad, trashy cinema.
Yeah, or disposable. Not like... Even if it's unconscious or subconscious, like, political. Yeah, there's something in somebody's head, and I don't want to go off to it. I had a conversation earlier about Neil Blomkamp, and Chappie, District 9, all that bullshit. And I won't get into the rule, but there's certain racially charged stuff in there. But it's informed by that because he's an Afrikaner, he's a white South African who's reportedly a victim of violence, black or color people of color refugees. So that psychology is in his movies. Now whether or not it's clear or it's balanced or whatever, that's a different argument. But it's there. You can't deny it. It's just there. Whether it be the apartheid weird analogy or the build the wall or it stuff is there. And so it's all these movies are being made in the current times. It's part of our whole the zeitgeist, as it were. But it's there. You can't deny it, or to deny it, it's to deny really engaging with the movie.
And so, it's also to deny that a lot of kind of game-changing classic movies that we all consider classics now were scoffed at their time.
Yeah.
I mean, Night of the Living Dead, just because I'm looking at the fucking Blu-ray on my shelf right now. Yeah. Night of the Living Dead was a fucking driving movie. Just quick, bam, yeah. Nothing there. Mm-hmm. Nobody gave... People who saw it went nuts, but nobody gave a shit about it. Only became a thing because somebody lost the copyright fucking law and they played it nonstop on fucking cable without having to pay money, kind of forcing it into your head. I'm watching so often. Okay, I'm seeing what they're doing here. I'm seeing what they're doing. This isn't just a cheap fucking thing.
Or even John Carpenter's a whole of really.
John Carpenter was a fucking lived in the ghetto and basically quit because Hollywood and most of society said, no, his movies aren't that good. Or outside of Halloween, he kind of just makes stupid movies.
Now they're prescient,
And Night of the Living Dead especially can help tie into our next segment, which we're going to move into, which is you were talking about lead actors of color in genre cinema. Night of the Living Dead is obviously an example of that.
Yeah.
And... just real quick, though, before we move on to our next segment, we're going to have a little fun. You've already talked about Neil Blomkamp. You've already talked about things like that. Let's just burn a few more bridges for you. Let's just do a couple of rapid fire.
Have you seen Film Twitter? Nobody want to see him make a RoboCop movie. Nobody wants to see him make another movie general.
Nevertheless, let's get your Colin Trevorrow fight going. Let's start with this. What is a film from your childhood that, as a grown person, now that you've become a film critic, now you're somebody who understands film, you recognize isn't actually good, but you still love because of your personal affection for it.
Return of Swamp Thing?
Okay.
That's one of apparently two movies ever made.
We brought this up on the show before, but that is my favorite Onion article of all time, is film scholars discover there are literally thousands of films that aren't Swamp Thing or Return of Swamp Thing.
Yo, fucking Dick Durock, man. First of all, my fucking name is Dick Durock. Shit. Name your kid that. About success. With a big green dick. Hella Locklear.
He's got that big dick energy.
Yeah, they show you to you. They show you the vegetable dick. Hella Locklear got that shit. Yo. It's amazing. He fights the big brain dude. Dr. Yakub, whoever that was, with the big brain.
Doctor.
Oh, yeah, that's who it was. Code of language, man. That's who that was. Was an alligator in there or leech? I forget. Alligator leech. Man, and beat everybody up. The swamp, those weird dudes with the meat, fucking. It was like the guys from V. Stop being in V. The series V with the lizards. Yeah. And they came to the swamp. They're like, let's go, let's do the swamp. And then Green Dick is like, nah. You mean my Green Dick gonna stop y'all? And he does. Slap that shit. Whack! That's the movie.
Wait a minute. I want to clarify. I asked you a childhood favorite film, and it's a movie that you're referring to now as Green Dick.
That's what I remember.
That's...
Then he pulled the shit out. She ate it. And then it became an hallucination. He's a big white guy. Which I know. He was a handsome white guy. He's good. He was all right. Dick Durock. Gave it a Durock, right?
You know what would have been good in that movie? If she, all the crazy shit's happening. She's like, oh my God, I think I'm going to be sick. And he said, you know what's good for his stomach? Unzips his pants. Some roughage.
Got that kale before his kale, baby.
Got
that kale for you, baby. Yeah, Swamp Thing.
He impregnated her, and then she moved to Brooklyn, and now...
Yeah, came to treat
you. Have gentrified Brooklyn.
You know what? That's organic, because it doesn't suck. It's great. Blue's great. Fuck all y'all. Blue's fucking great. Return of Swamp Thing. Go watch it in a drive-thru in a theater. Go watch it. Go put it on the DVD. Show your moms. Green Dick.
Any more Big Dick Energy movies you want to talk about?
That's what we talk about. Shit, okay. Well, speaking of Marky Mark, I guess it's obvious, huh? Yeah.
are you just racking your brain for movies with large dicks in it now? Is that what we're
doing? How many are there? We need more of those.
Scary Movie 2.
Shame.
That's right. All them dicks.
All them dicks.
That's what we need. Not like,
No. You know what? We're going to move on to the next segment. I want to end this segment with all them dicks.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Vice Victus, your man. So I'm joining the guys here today for my pick for them. It's Solo from 1986, starring Mario Van Peebles and William Sadler. This is a fun one for me, I think, but maybe not less so for Tom. It's about a android super soldier who grows a conscience. This one I picked it once because it was kind of a bit of a challenge to pick it from what neither of the guys have seen before, but also just a fun kind of link in the chain of African-American cinema, or at least genre cinema.
All right, so as you guys might know from other times we've done this, when we have a guest on the show, they pick the film for us. So our friend Vice here was charged with picking a film for us to watch that he felt was either so incredibly good, so remarkably bad, or so crucial to the history of cinema that it simply must be seen. And as you heard, he chose 1996's Solo.
Which I know you're asking yourself, what?
I did. Tom and I knew nothing about this film going in. So I'll just give a quick overview of where I'm at, and then we'll let Tom give you a quick overview of where his head's at.
What were some of the options before you landed on Solo? Because there was one you picked that I had seen.
Dog Soldiers was the original one that he threw out there.
Fuck, I should have lied.
I remember the conversation, I can tell you this right now, because the three of us are working on a project right now. I don't know how much we can say, but we're working on a project now that involves a large number of films. So we were going through a catalog of films, and we were talking, and I said, you can pick any film you want for the show. I even said, like, if one of us has seen it, one of us hasn't, that's fine. So he said, Dog Soldiers. I went, okay, let me see if Tom's seen it. I came back and said, Tom's seen it. It's still fine. We can do it. And you're like, well, has he seen Solo, Mario Van Peebles? And I'd never heard of this movie, so I hadn't seen it. So I asked Tom. Tom had never seen it, so I said, good. Okay, that's what we're doing. And I, from my end, heard, you know, you said Solo, Mario Van Peebles, and I know kind of, you know, you kind of taste it, but I hear Mario Van Peebles, and I think, like, okay, I've seen two Mario Van Peebles movies. I've seen Badass, which is his, you know, his telling of the story of his father's production of Sweet Sweet Beck's Badass Song, and I've seen New Jack City, which is a great, like, hybrid 90s crime film and blaxploitation film. It's a fascinating movie. And so I just thought, like, oh, this is naturally going to be more like that. Then I watched the trailer, was like, what in the all holy hell is this? Because the first thing you see is like a robot skeleton point to Michael Jordan on the screen and go, like, Mike. And I immediately told Tom, do no research on the film. Don't watch the trailer. I want you to go in blind to this.
At this point.
Never. I want you to go in blind to this thing. So that's what I kind of dug it. I was on its wavelength. Tom, let's talk a little bit about your initial response to Solo before we get into the now you guys know
there's a time in every man's life where they come to realize that maybe their dreams up to this point have been bullshit. And this was one of those times where I thought to myself, maybe movies aren't good. Maybe I've been lying to myself this whole time. That maybe I have to reassess things, like watching a movie like In the Heat of the Night and saying, maybe we shouldn't have social justice for anybody. Maybe we should just have one guy at the top. We all go, we should just be back like in Soviet Russia, and we're all just going hungry, and we all got the same old ratty ass clothes, and we're all just miserable because we don't deserve good things. And then Solo had 90 more minutes to go.
So,
and then Adrian Brody shows up. And you just gotta go, wow. this is the kind of movie where I'm really surprised with his fucking nose that he's not a Jewish stereotype. fuck. I've seen a lot of bad movies in my day. I own a lot of bad movies. In both the ironic and unironic enjoyment camps. And wow. Really makes me wish I was on that same cocaine that fueled this fucking movie. Because you know what the director's name, like Norberto Barba, he was taking a break from smuggling some kind of shit.
Jesus. So, this is maybe
the cheapest fucking movie I've ever seen. Yes, it is. This is like Death Wish 5, where it's very clear that Charles Bronson's on the edge of death, so they can only kind of film him doing things. And they only are allowed one take because his fucking Alzheimer's medicine runs out super quick. So it's very flat and uninteresting, and somehow cons like a really good B-movie actor, character actor to show up. Death Wish 5, it was Michael Parks. This one, fucking William Sadler.
My close personal friend, William Sadler. We love William Sadler.
Close personal friend, Billy Sads.
No, this is true, actually. At a press function, I met William Sadler. And what I did was, like, we talked about it, and I walked up to him just briefly, I was like, listen, I can ask you 1,001 questions about fucking Wonderfalls, because Wonderfalls was the show he was on. And he just looked at me, and I thought he was going to walk, he just goes, all right, what do you want to know about Wonderfalls? I was like, oh, shit, okay. And when we talked, I will say the coolest moment, not to get too off track, but we'll try and derail Tom's ranting for a couple minutes, was I said to him, I said, all right, I have to ask you one question, because Winter Soldier had just come out, like, a month or two before. I said, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you one question, because he's the president in Iron Man 3. I said, as the president, what do you think about S.H.I.E.L.D. infiltrating Hydra? And he looked at me, and he goes, well, I think it's very serious, and I'm going to put together a committee to look into it. And as he said that, somebody went over to grab him to, like, meet somebody, and he goes, hey, Bill, I need you for a second. And he goes, all right, it's good talking to you. And then, like, immediately gets dragged away, looks back at me and goes, how presidential was that? Walk away, and I'm like, I love this man forever. But I have much less strong feelings than Tom. I actually kind of had fun with this one. I didn't hate it. I mean, you know, in my rating on Letterboxd, I gave it 2.5 stars, which for me is like my definition of, okay, I know this isn't objectively a good movie. I'm not going to sit down and say that it's so radically different from, like, another movie I like, which is Soldier with Kurt Russell, anything like that. But I had fun with it. It was there.
Would you say that Solo is a soldier in a universal way?
I mean,
Fuck! you're making a fucking ripoff of a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, but you don't even have the budget that his coke habit had on that movie. Fuck you. You fucking, like, Duplass-ass production, like, fucking movie.
Ugh. I don't think you meant to do this, but you have actually...
It was like being back in film school and watching a bunch of dipshits who are just living off of their parents' money, making movies, and like, you made a movie, and you're like, no, you didn't. You made a fucking document about how you want to fuck your mom or something, but you didn't make a movie.
Movie you're talking about, too.
Yeah, okay, I got a question. Why is Mario Van Peebles' portrayal of a robot generously can be described as mentally challenged?
I like that our guest has not had a word in edgewise yet in this.
Listen, this motherfucker spoke enough in that 40-minute segment before. He's going to sit here and he's going to fucking take it. God.
You got him next, yeah.
I just want to point out, no one will ever come on this show again.
This is the opposite of big dick energy.
Damn! Ah, shit.
This is like tiki torch dick energy.
No, but you have done something impressive here, even though you didn't mean to, which is that...
You made a movie that made me wish I was watching Elvis Act.
Yeah, no, really, like, prior to this, the angriest times I've gotten was when I made him watch Jailhouse Rock.
Oh, shit.
For an ill-planned Elvis special. Oh, shit. And that was
another Kurt Russell connection.
That was the low bar before, but I feel like you've made Tom angrier, and I think that's
impressive.
You're
lucky that I've seen Yes, Giorgio this year, too, so it's not the worst movie I've seen this year. Marathon Peebles was still dealing with the trauma of being in fucking Sweet Sweet Badass.
Yeah.
Because Melvin was just a fucking maniac.
Have you ever seen Sweet Sweet Back?
No.
Okay. You've seen Sweet Sweet Back. I don't know. Really?
I've only seen Badass, okay. Actually.
That Sweet Sweet Back is a weird movie. Like, you understand the boundaries that it broke, but at the same time, you do wonder if ultimately it was worth it.
Yeah.
For the amount of child abuse and just... I mean, the fact that people was like, oh yeah, I got like plenty of STDs from the raw dog and I did in that movie. And it's like, I don't know
and
if this was worth
that
it.
And the fact that in his movie Badass, he makes his own son
play
himself doing that scene.
Yeah! Nothing about this is okay. Nothing about this is okay. But, so that was... But my experience with Marvin Peebles, again, New Jack City, great movie. Legitimately...
Well, I thought at first when he said Marvin Peebles solo, I thought it was going to be a movie that Marvin Peebles directed. And I was like,
yeah,
okay.
This is it. Like, because he directed and co-starred in New Jack City. That's what I was expecting. New Jack City, I think, is legitimately a really good movie. I don't know. Some people have argued it's like a cult classic. Some people have argued it's a B movie. Our dear friends the Bodega Boys have called it a quote unquote hood classic. I legitimately just think it's a good movie.
Well, you know what's funny little backstory thing, just because you mentioned his name in the earlier segment. New Jack City only exists because of Clint Eastwood, because he cast him in Heartbreak Ridge and mm-hmm. he really mm-hmm. took a shine to him, yeah. And nobody was gonna make New Jack City, and Clint Eastwood just kind of told Warner, was like, no, make this kid's movie. He's good. He's got a really good thing. Just do it.
Yeah. And it's New Jack City, of course, carried on the back of Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Which is another person we've been talking about a lot, because you've been wanting to talk about Blade, and I think Blade is probably part of what inspired this choice.
Okay, so I guess I better start now. So,
no, we give you permission to speak now,
Tom. Jesus. That is
please
all...
bring some positivity back into
is,
my life.
That is all fair, and I console you when you're in your pain, in your wounds. I saw Solo maybe like 12 times as a kid. I remember it premiering on Saturday Night HBO. And I recorded it on VCR, the ancient devices. Me and my older brother watched that tape, yeah, like I said, 12 times or so during our childhood. So, when we talk about, like, you know, trash cinema, as it were, you know, B-movies and stuff, one of the things it's so weird, white dudes. Like, okay, so there's a larger conversation about, you know, Black Panther came out this year, and now we have Crazy Rich Asians, you know, about how much does a movie has to represent the entire race, as it were. And, you know, or things being, they have to, they're too big to fail, you know. And, you know, we mentioned earlier, you know, how Night of the Living Dead,
its
power comes from having the black actor, which wasn't even intended.
Yeah.
But that's where, you know. And so, even with that kind of, that progenitor, still, for the most part, slashers and horror or B-movies in general, it's just, you know, weird white dudes doing crazy shit. Whereas, we don't really see that, you know, well, black people kind of boxed into, like, blaxploitation. Blackula and all that kind of stuff, you know? So, as a kid watching this stuff, you know, I've seen, like you mentioned before, Universal Soldier the year before, 95, I think it was. You know, I'm seeing all this crazy, you know, but, you know, crazy, but, mid-budgeted sci-fi nonsense. I'm like, this is fun. I'm having fun with this. So, for me, seeing a black lead character do that, it was like, you know, kind of like, anything's possible. Like, you know, we're not limited to just, like, New Jack City or whatever, you know, like, he can do this stuff. And then, so yeah, that's kind of what got, why it stuck with me all these years, because it was, because it's not, it gave us, it's giving you the ability to be nonsensical, to be crap, because that's just as important as being, getting the opportunity to shine, you know. I always say, you know, Moonlight, you know, one of the most important, quote-unquote, movies of the year, or of this decade, or whatever. So is Friday. Like, you know, with the Ice Cube and all that. Like, that's important, too, because, like, that's not about being important. It's about these motherfuckers just living together, living their life, having crazy adventures. Like, we need that, too. We need that release to be silly and stupid and have it count as much as the other silly, stupid shit that people have made throughout the years. You know?
But you know what's interesting, especially Friday you bring up. I'll tell you what's strange. You know, I know people can watch Friday and be like, oh, that's just, you know, a fun, dumb comedy. But somebody who I would never expect to have seen that movie, let alone have feelings about it, is my middle-aged mother. My middle-aged white mom who, like, will look at certain moments in that film that she's seen and just be like, this is horrifying. Like, because when you think about it, it is just kind of like what Friday did and what was so transgressive about that film is that it basically turned around to you know, everybody kind of went like, yeah, no, we can have fun with this. Mm-hmm. That normally a movie where if you said your protagonist is a guy who gets his bike stolen by the neighborhood bully and at one point he's going to get a gun and fucking shoot the guy, yeah, you'd be like, oh, that's going to be some John Singleton-esque drama.
Yeah.
But that same conflict is weaved into a movie that is undeniably funny to the point where something like Bye Felicia has saturated the culture and is quoted by people as far removed from that film's target market as, you know, middle-aged Patricia Natale. You know, it's like, it's interesting how that has also had that kind of cultural impact.
We got to have the space to have that tomfoolery. We got to, like, to just be stupid and be dumb. And so with Solo, it's like, yeah, he's just, like, cheap-ass Universal Soldier ripoff. But it's like, and, you know, and also, let's talk about the actual movie itself, the text of it. So, in the movie, Solo is he's an android. He's in a special government project, you know, be the next, you know, the next generation of soldier. You know, he's invisible. Well, you know, he's impervious. Well, he's hard to kill. He's, you know, smart. He has a computer brain, whatever.
It's not abundantly clear.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What
because he takes a cliff to the entire body by driving a helicopter into it.
Yeah.
And kind of just walks away. But then he gets shot by an assault rifle at the beginning of the movie and he's got a giant fucking hole
in his stomach. Yeah, gas in his fucking cybernetic fucking ribcage. So yeah, I mean, well, I guess, and yeah, he's more of a side asset than a main asset. Like there's still like soldiers. So the beginning of the movie is they're like a squad of soldiers, like a Black Ops guys going to, like, you know, take out some warlord or whatever. In some, I forget, is it a name country or is it just like made up?
I don't remember.
That's the weird thing about the film is that I feel like, I mean, you're breaking into the plot, but I kind of like, after a half hour, I almost stopped trying to follow it because it was almost like, this is a weird comparison, but I just watched it today and this is going to sound like a really weird one because it's about as white a movie as you can get, apparently. Kind of like The Truman Show. Insofar as, it's, you're really just like, once it introduces to you the idea of, here's a character who does not comprehend the world around him, and we're going to watch him find his own individuality.
Yeah.
If you take too long to think about the logic of it, it's not going to hold up.
Yeah,
like, Truman Show's one of those movies, you know, watching it, like, it's, you're really, you can be drawn in, that's it, you're drawn in by Truman, because when you try and break down, like, okay, but how exactly... Yeah. Like, okay,
this is not hard sci-fi at all. It's very
It's with this one too. It's like you're just there for the attention. You're there to follow him.
Yeah.
My big problem with the movie is that the sci-fi doesn't make sense. I mean, we've seen Universal Soldier.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially me and you, the last two direct-to-video movies awesome.
You've seen Universal Soldier.
Yeah, I know. Fucking Chrissy Pants. You haven't seen Universal Soldier. We've seen Soldier with Kurt Russell.
Yeah, yeah.
And even going back a little further behind, RoboCop is kind of the same thing. My big problem with the movies is that it's essentially just, the entire movie is just the third act of all of those movies, because he's immediately going against his code.
Yeah. It's not established that, like, he was, like, there's no intro of him until the second act, where, like, he has flashbacks of how he was created, hence the scene with the, Mike. Like, it's very strange how you do that. You kind of throw you in there with it.
There's no...
Yeah, I had that. I even had that note too. I mean, I liked that element, but this movie starts at Act Two of another movie.
Not even Act Two; it's essentially Act Three because he's essentially immediately being chased by his superiors because he's going against his code.
Yeah, this is the trope of the robot getting sentience slash conscience, not consciousness, but actual conscience of, like, right or wrong. That's the whole point. That's the whole drive of the movie. Is that so? He sees the innocents in the field of fire, and he refuses to kill them. So his handlers, the government, they want to get rid of him, and so he escapes and bands with the local villagers. So then becomes like Seven Samurai, like he or yeah.
He basically teaches them how to fight.
Yeah, how to fight from the warlord and also
military. And like I said, if you think about it for any time, because I was looking over some notes that I made, and there's some stuff that just, like, they talk about, like, we made him to be the ultimate fighter, you know, to understand how combat in the battlefield. Yeah. And then, like, at one point, a little kid, like, bluffs during, like, a soccer game. He's like, he seemed injured, but he's not. And I'm like, yeah, no, he's pretending. Like, why? And I'm like, I feel like this... your elite killing machine should understand deception. as a veteran, you can speak to this more than I would. I do not believe that all enemy combatants are 100% forthright. You know, I don't believe... I feel like you should have some sort of... But again, it's almost like it's... For me, I feel like if you're drawn in by that story and you can and you are attached to that character anyway, you're going to take that ride. And if you're not, and if it hasn't won you over to that character, then
so
it,
the,
it's
you,
over.
The YouTube thing is that, you know, like, so... The fool you mentioned before, like, you were a soldier. Like, well, that wasn't necessarily set in the future, per se, but it was, like, established. It was, like, this is, like, highly advanced... Good stuff.
Like, it's not like Blade Runner future. It's more like kind of 5 minutes in the future.
No, sort
of
but even this. So that's you know, Soldier. Yeah. But Solo was like in its moment. It is in that year. Like it's 1996, but we have a robot now. Like wait, so that's why it doesn't really. That's from the beginning. It doesn't. The tone is off because, wait, why do we have this advanced android soldier in the, this year? Like it doesn't.
Well, that's what. And I itself. Also like when I started it, I was going through a weird stage because I you know. As you know, we've talked about everything. I have a great respect for your taste in film, and I was like genuinely sitting there watching this,
I
going.
Used to.
And so, but so I started out watching this, and I'm like, okay, let's figure out because you didn't tell me why you picked it. I didn't know why you picked it, and that's kind of what's fun about it. I was like, okay, let's figure out what it is. And at first, I'm watching like, oh, maybe this is really you know the way that like he's torn apart, and like maybe we should throw him out and let's fix him. Like, oh, maybe this whole film is a metaphor. For the disposability of our men in uniform, and then I sort of go through like, oh no, maybe this is actually a metaphor for the way that that the contemporary black man is treated in 90s America, and then by the 30-minute mark, I was like, no, I think.
See, your biggest
mistake
here. I think
this is just nuts.
Your biggest mistake here was thinking that anyone making that movie could say metaphor. William Sadler probably could, but I think he was so just give me my money.
Yeah.
That he kind of was in like a brain fart space of like, oh, you know, that thing where something means another thing.
Here's the thing. That's the other interesting thing about this, too, is watching it, is that Marion Van Peebles is a good director. You know, whether it's Badass, New Jack City. And I there's a party that wants to go...
God, I wish he directed this movie.
There's a party that honestly, wants to... Yeah, I agree. But there's a party that wants to go, why the fuck would he do this? But then also, he got offered a part that... You're not going to say no to. I mean, at the end of the day, like, if you're a young actor and you're young and they turn and go, hey, you're going to be a fucking
but he's not
robot.
A young actor.
What?
He's like 10 years into his career at this point.
But I'm saying, no, okay, well, what I mean is if you're a young enough man that they will offer you action roles. This is before the old man action.
But this
so
is
I'm saying,
like,
he's at the point now where basically somebody turns around and goes, yeah, you're going to be a cool ass killer robot and you're going to blow shit up. Basically, probably thinking, I've only got 10 more years where these roles are going to be offered to me. And also as an actor of color, it's not going to come along even as often then. Fuck it. It's 1996. If this movie sucks, no one will ever see it again. There's not going to be some interconnected place where nerds get together and highly dissect movies that no one should talk about. Like, that's not going to happen.
So, okay. This kind of reminds me a year prior to this, 95, Virtuosity. Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe in his early gigs.
Yeah.
You could say there is metaphor to be found in that, but no, it's a special. Cop and criminal special movie. You know, so like, and Denzel at the time in his action prime or you know coming up like he still has his youth and his physique as to be a badass you know renegade cop as it were.
Even though fuck seeing him in the Equalizer 2 just handle a room full of, all right. of dude bros just like. Like, okay.
That's the contender of robust ass will be my way.
I started cackling every time he just started laying the smell. When he cuts that one dude's fucking forehead with his sharp
his own fucking black card. Yeah, take that bitch.
that's a contender with best ass open, I believe, alongside when the rabbits start attacking Domhnall Gleeson and Peter Rabbit.
I heard about that.
That's also a contender.
Yeah.
Didn't
they try to kill him?
They do, yeah. They try and fucking shock? Yeah, they try and murder him.
To be fair,
this movie's got a bunch of rabbits trying to murder a man.
To be fair, that man's trying to murder them too. He's asking for it.
Hey, game on. Yeah.
I mean, you come at the king, you best not fucking miss.
fucking space, no, but Nazi, see, space Nazi ass motherfucker.
I mean,
yeah, you goddamn fucking intergalactic Richard Spencer wannabe motherfucker.
Listen, we're gonna get a Peter Rabbit 2. We're gonna get a Paddington 3. We can get this cinematic universe going.
Hey, listen, all I care about is we're getting Den of Thieves 2. That's all. Yeah. But see, like, Virtuosity is like a good example of what I wish Solo was.
Exactly, yeah.
Virtuosity is dumb as fuck. It's really stupid, and it swings really hard with its sci-fi concepts. But it's got Denzel being very good, being very Denzel, like very charismatic and very believable in his role. You got Russell Crowe going for it, eating the fucking scenery up. But you also have a director that may not be a quote-unquote good director. He's got a good visual dynamism to him. He's got a good sense of making this feel like a movie when this doesn't. This feels very cheap. And if this was like one of these like Scott Adkins movies we watch every year where like at least the action's good. Because I see a lot of Scott Adkins movies that are just like Hard Target 2 is not like doesn't have a deep plot or anything, but it's got some good fucking action sequences. You could go, okay, I can overlook a well done plot in service of some good adrenaline pumping action. This has nothing. And it doesn't even have Mario Van Peebles being able to sell this because it's like it almost feels like he thinks he's doing Rain Man and not RoboCop.
Yeah, the movie does, well, in the literal sense, retard itself, as in it stops its own growth momentum. The flashes of him like doing these cool martial arts, you know, and he has this great physique. Like he's clearly like prepared and built up for this role. You know, there's a part where he's you see a flashback of him doing a fighting training or sparring as it will to the death, fighting a group of four soldiers single-handedly. And you see he has the wherewithal of an action star.
But the boss fight is against old-ass William Sadler.
Yeah, exactly. So like, it keeps impeding itself. I brought up Virtuosity because, you know, that's an example of it done well. A good example of this kind of thing. But even then, for me, just having that on the shelf, you know, Virtuosity... Solo, Spawn, as terrible as that is, like, that's still a canon for me. Like, these are the stars that...
Now, Spawn was 97, right?
Yeah, 97.
And then 98, you pretty much hit the...
Well, yeah. So, let's move into why, the other reason why I want to make this movie, so...
So that you get an excuse to talk about a completely different movie.
Before I say that, I would say, to see the kind of links of this movie, you mentioned Universal Soldier.
Yeah,
there was the first original one with the 95, I believe it was, or 94 maybe.
92.
Oh, is that far? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So there were two direct to cable sequels.
Yeah.
Then there was Universal Soldier: The Return.
Yeah.
A few years later after that, which brought back Van Damme, but also had Michael Jai White.
Yeah.
As an android super soldier who whooped his ass. So what I mean is, like, for me, I'm following that strain, like that thread of, like, you know, the super, like, these black actors in this genre stuff doing dumb shit, but like it's still like it's they can be part of it, you know.
Yeah.
And again, that one is kind of a bad movie too, but like he's done way better.
Well, let's be completely honest here. The only good Universal Soldier movies are the last two.
Yeah.
Especially the one with Scott Adkins, where it's essentially kind of a direct-to-video Apocalypse Now sort of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's fucking great.
Yeah, I get that.
But to lead into a point a movie we're about to say, I made this comparison last week, and I think it's kind of a good comparison, and it goes into the diversity thing, how sometimes movies that aren't really... actually good kind of get improved because it means something to people. Yeah. We kind of saw it this year with A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it doesn't...
Yeah, it's got lambasted, but, like, you know, that's a lot of girls.
A lot of little girls, and there's the interracial thing that the movie does very specifically deal with. It's not a good movie, but it's an important movie to people, so it gets elevated. Same thing happened in the 70s. You had Shaft, and you had Dolomite.
Oh, this was... Did we talk about this last
week? I made this comparison last week. Yeah. Shaft's actually, like, a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's also an important movie. Dolomite's not, on any conceivable level, a good movie. It's very watchable because it's fucking insane, but it's not a good movie. It's kind of the dichotomy where Blade is kind of like Shaft, where it's a good movie. Like, it's a fucking one of the best movies of the 90s, and it's an important movie. Solo's more in the Dolomite Camp. Where you just watch it the whole time going, what were any of you fuckers thinking? Especially when you can look at least three of the people in that movie. Van Peebles, William Sadler, and fucking Demian Bashir.
Wow. Yeah, we haven't even addressed the stacked cast in this movie.
It's not stacked cast. There's three people that have had careers afterwards.
Well, you've got William Sadler, you've got Damian Bashir, you've got Adrian Brody. You've got, yeah. I would argue at least at the time, Mario Van Peebles had something going for him, had some momentum going. I don't know where.
Mario Van Peebles, maybe the most visually accurate of all the Malcolm X performers in cinema, because he looks weirdly, like, creepily like Malcolm X and Ali.
That's right. Oh my God.
To the point where I was honestly, as a child, thinking, are they using, like,
digital
documentary footage or something? Because this is fucking weird.
So we brought it up. So this year, August, this month, is the 20th anniversary of Blade from 1998. Seminal action movie starring Wesley Snipes as the titular Blade, the vampire, the Daywalker. Half human, half vampire who hunts other vampires in an internal quest for vengeance and bloodlust and so forth. And so that way, movies like Solo and Spawn all kind of lead up to this kind of big breakthrough where this, the genre and the drama coalesce into a whole that actually works.
Yeah.
Other people have mentioned, like, a quick shout out to the website Black No Problems. They've mentioned how Blade is very much a black exploitation movie. Like, it has strains of it, all the black hero against the man, in this case, the vampire overlords.
Yeah.
But also just how it also kind of, to me, how it's important how it predates and also kind of primes audiences for the oncoming superhero craze.
I mean, I won't argue that if it wasn't for Blade, the superhero, I don't think Fox would have had the balls to make X-Men.
Yeah.
Because Blade was coming off the heels of Batman and Robin, which kind of showed everyone, let's not do these anymore.
Yeah. And even the year before that, 97 Spawn, was, it made money, but it was a critical flop. It was panned all around. So with Blade, it's a very singular, cohesive, well-made movie, but also, like, it a prime audiences for one, the mix of this high, CGI mixed with drama, and it wasn't over budget. It wasn't a big budget, but it used the money well enough, well, for its time, to show, these crazy graphics, but also have, like, down and dirty, real martial arts choreography with one of the greatest martial arts actors in history.
Plus, it also, and I know this may seem like a minor thing, but, it was also remarkable simply for the fact that it was a blockbuster movie that was a huge hit starring a black man who was not Will Smith.
And a very hard R-rated.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. For the 90s specifically, like, you would look at that and you'd be like, there's no way. Like, if it wasn't part of Big Willy Weekend as it was dubbed in its day, like, it's not
it felt like the 90s was more open to that than, like, the 2000s, because you had Will Smith, but Wesley was also still had Eddie Murphy was making money back then.
What I mean by that is, like, Blade especially is the kind of thing where it's like, because Will Smith's movies and even Wesley Snipes' movies made money because people wanted to go see Will Smith and to a lesser extent Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
But Will Smith was the biggest movie star in the world, and Will Smith movies made money because they were Will Smith movies. Blade brought in a whole audience, a whole slew of people who were going to see this, and that's part of ties into the comic book movie thing, ties into whatever.
Yeah.
Brought in a whole slew of people who wouldn't go see a movie because they wouldn't even necessarily know who Wesley Snipes was in some cases. They went because this thing looked cool and it was intriguing and it had a style and it had a basis in comics and all that. Meanwhile, the next year, not to harp on something I will always harp on, but the very next year we proved that a name doesn't mean anything because Will Smith bombed with Wild Wild West.
God damn it!
No,
how
but,
you
it's,
it?
But it's
how
true.
Do we bet this?
Ah, because think about
it. Avoid
it. No, because
why'd you warn me, man? Why'd you fucking warn me about this shit?
You work with this motherfucking man at the desk. If he's not fucking, you should know better. This motherfucker. Anytime he gets a whiff of talking about black in cinema, he's gonna bring up Wild Wild West.
But I'm saying seriously,
what are you doing?
Think about
this,
it.
Listen, I didn't warn you because I had to watch this motherfucking movie. So this is what you get. More Wild Wild West on you.
But
table.
No, I'm just, damn. I'm saying that sincerely, like, it changed because it wasn't like Blade came out and yeah, Wesley Snipes was the name of it, but people went because it was Blade.
Yeah, like
they didn't like it. Wasn't a matter of like because Wesley Snipes. It wasn't like they the next year Wesley Snipes rolled out some other movie and people went, oh, I gotta go see Wesley. It was the fact that, and like I said, yeah, I do make the Wild West comparison because it's the same kind of thing. Like you look at the next year in 99 with The Matrix. It wasn't like people turned up for Keanu Reeves or Lawrence Fishburne. It was this. That's Neo.
Yeah,
you know that's Morpheus.
Yeah, and
that's thing, Blade.
In,
like it changed
the year before it. How it primed. You know, it's the hard R. Dimly lit black leather aesthetic.
Yeah,
that's Tim Blade. That's before Matrix, before even the Underworld. You know, which kind of kept
before
going.
Dark City.
Yeah. It's all kind of primed audiences.
But it's that
for that. You know,
it's that coalesced the character and the actor coalesced because people will see Will Smith, but if the coalition doesn't work like Wild Wild West did, they don't want to see it. People like Wesley Snipes. But that fucking merging,
yeah.
he got essentially his man with no name because he made movies up to that point where he didn't really have like, oh my god, Wesley Snipes, he has this, he's got this guy. No, he is Blade.
Yeah.
To the point that, does anybody remember there was a Blade TV show? With Sticky Fingers as Blade?
Motherfucking Fingers. Oh!
Especially because Wesley Snipes has laid such a heavy shadow over the character that the comics completely rewrote what the character was to be more like what Wesley Snipes, his character is. To the point that Sticky Fingers was just trying to be, like, do a Wesley Snipes with that whispery kind of, like, badass voice. To the point that Wesley Snipes is motherfucking close to 60 at this point, and people are still like, just make another Blade movie with Wesley Snipes.
And so, real quick, the circle is complete. The director of Solo made one of the episodes of Blade, the TV series.
That's another reason why nobody remembers
the
TV show.
But no, I see your point. And that's, again, I don't mean to harp on just that dumb movie, but it is just kind of, it's interesting that you talk about Blade, because that is, again, one of those things where it was, that was when I think things started to change.
Yeah.
People were more invested and not, you know, in characters rather than actors. And particularly with that, like, it became this kind of realization of, on the part of studios of, if we have good characters, characters that people can latch on to, ultimately it doesn't really matter if we have the biggest star in the world or we just have a capable action star.
This is how Hugh Jackman, nobody, you know, to most audiences, embodied Wolverine.
Yeah.
And people were like, who is this tall guy? He's got a short squat. He sold the character.
And whereas, himself. You know, you look at something like Solo, like the film we're talking about now, that tried to market itself weirdly. Look at those, like, this is Mario Van Peebles.
Yeah.
If you like him, you'll show up and see him in this, which was kind of like, and again, that was they were trying to. It feels like, honestly, with Solo, they were trying to have a Will Smith movie in a way.
Yeah.
You look at the posters for it later, they were trying to have a Will Smith movie where you'll show up and see Enemy of the State.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that Will Smith's name's on the poster.
Yeah.
Men in Black is a movie that should have bombed. In every way should have bombed, but people showed up because Will Smith's name was on the poster. Blade, and another one, Blade, if you had put Will Smith in that, probably wouldn't have been the same movie. Probably would have been because the studio would have gotten too involved in it, but Blade was allowed to be its own thing, and it was allowed to go like, no, we think people will like this character and the story we're telling, and it really doesn't matter, you know, whether it's got the biggest box office name. So it's, you know, I see where you see that kind of evolution there, and I definitely
you throw in
that.
The clarity of vision and the immaculate execution of Blade, which is what a movie like Solo doesn't have, because there's stuff in Solo, like, if they wanted to build upon it, like the idea of making a robot that chooses its own facade, which is based off of the fucking dead soldiers, because they have another motherfucking robot that's based off of fucking William Sadler, who just died.
And
so you want to tackle something, because it almost seems like there's a very clear choice on the movie's part to have all of the the military men, the upper echelon guys, as white guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some social commentary could have done there with these white guys using science to essentially make new slaves.
Yeah.
To fight their wars for them, based off of the fucking skin of other dead soldiers. You could have done something with that.
Well, I mean, that's the end of the thing. This is based on a book.
Wow.
How?
Wow.
I looked it up.
Wow.
Guys, this is a quick Wikipedia search.
You think I was going to be spending more time thinking about this movie.
But
that's
what I'm saying. I think this is this
cover of it.
But it was bought by a studio who wanted a Universal Soldier or a Terminator or something.
Yeah. So let me kind of finish this up for you guys. And now that I've subjected you to this this misery, what do you think would be the first thing you remember when you recall Solo?
I'll go first before Tom goes into whatever he's gonna say. Which is that for me, it's a moment where there's a log on ropes. It's like swinging towards some kids, and Solo watches as like one kid ducks down to save the other, and he doesn't understand why they did it, like why the kid would risk his life for the other kid. But then as the log is swinging back, it looks like it's about to hit them, and he jumps in the way and like grabs the log and stops it from hitting them. And I think it gets to the heart of what I actually enjoyed about this film, is that that's the kind of moment I watch it now and I'm like, okay, whatever. But I also realize, like, if I was a kid, like 6 or 7 years old, watching this on TV or watching this from Blockbuster, I'd be like, that was great. Like, that's great. The robot's learning. The robot's learning to be people. And, like, and I think that's kind of what I responded to, is I was like, I know, this is something I watch and I know that, like you, this would have been a film that, had I seen it as a kid, I would have watched a lot. I would have, because it was just like in that wheelhouse of like, yeah, sure, it's dumb now, but I'm like, yeah, okay, the robot learns how to be human. It's like Data, but in the jungle.
I think if I saw this movie as a kid, it would have been the movie that every person has, which is the movie where you realize movies can be bad. Jesus. This would have supplanted Batman and Robin in my memory of the movie that told me movies can be bad. I'm not going to remember anything. Generally, the only thing I'm going to remember about this movie is when I shut my laptop after it was finished.
Not even the backflips through the forest of fire?
You're not going to remember back, Like Mike?
No, because it goes... No!
Damien Bashir's entrance.
No.
With the knife
Adrian Brody.
Opening into the tree.
No, because it goes back to my thing of, I wish someone crazy made this movie. Because I wish there was a moment, like in RoboCop, where he just... A guy's trying to, like, rape a girl, then he's like, I gotta write knife point, and Rogan just shoots through her skirt to blast his dick off. I wish there was just some, someone insane made this movie, and not someone just quickly trying to make a buck off of a movie. I wish someone fucking nuts made this movie, man.
Now, what about you? When you think of Solo, what's the first thing that jumps to mind for you?
Tom's anger.
Yeah, that was gonna be shit. Honestly, it's the backbreaker when he kills William Teller the first time. Spoilers. You know, it's you know the scene in Dark Knight Rises. You know,
yeah.
Bro, break your border. Hey, back we know. What the fuck is Solo did? See that? All that years before that shit. Motherfucking bring backs on knees. Crack that white boy's spine. But then. Robot William Sadler comes in and finishes him off. Next step. Like, get killed twice. It's fucked up.
Oh.
Two robots.
Another thing I wanted to mention about Equalizer 2. One of the best moments in Equalizer 2 that shows how much of a badass he is when he does that typical breaking a dude's neck in a move thing where he grabs a dude by the head and just snaps. He doesn't kill the guy. He just, like, fucking paralyzes him.
Yes.
Which is like, he knows how to break your neck so he doesn't fucking kill
you. And then, and like, they were in the hurricane fucking fight. When he uses knives and he
systematically slices the dude.
He carves him up like a fucking Christmas ham. Like, oh, this is fucking
then he
beautiful.
Fucking impales him to the wall.
Oh my god.
Fucking Equalizer 2. I wish like an Antoine Fuqua made this movie.
Shit, yeah.
A dude that just like can kind of get like the melodramatic heart of a movie, but then also just be like, here's the most blood you'll ever fucking see spill out of a human body.
Oh, what could have been? What could have been? Oh,
hey, there's always a remake.
Hey. All right, so the last question is, So, what do you, would you recommend? Is this a worth seeing, or is it a? Is it?
Is who it, wants? Who wants to go first?
Should you not miss this, or should you?
Who wants to?
I'm tired. No, don't see this movie. Mike, what do you think?
Tom's staring at me because I think he knows that I'm going to say something. He's like, honestly, it's fun. Yeah, check it out. Check it out. No, it's. I don't. I mean, look. You've heard us talk about this. You've heard us talk about it candidly as for what it is. If by the end of this, you're thinking, no, I don't want to watch this thing, don't watch it. Your mind's not going to be changed by it. But if you're like, yeah, I think this is interesting, there's something fun in it for you. I mean, again, for me, it's like, I have that place in my heart for kind of those movies that I used to watch on a Saturday morning. And so let me be honest, just for the moment of seeing Damien Bashir walk in and be like, oh shit, hey man. I'd say check it out. It's not, you know, it's not the worst use of your time.
And, you know, if nothing else, your friend Vice has given you a new addition to your trivia knowledge of black action movies.
There you go.
So, hey.
All right, so that's it for another episode. Right off the bat, obviously, for all the issues Tom may have, I think we both want to extend our hearty thanks for Vice Victus for joining us on this episode. We really appreciate it.
Saying farewell to our friendship.
I will say you are I had a lot of fun doing this. This was interesting. You are welcome back again. Where we can have more conversations about online film writing, about black actors in cinema, and about the exciting currency that is having Griffin Newman from The Tick following you on Twitter.
Also,
it's an exciting thing.
Also, any topics that Mike thinks will get him into the barbecue.
I mean, you can just cut me out.
Somebody's got to get out the food.
So thanks to Seawolf for the theme music. Rate and review the show. Subscribe on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. We are only a few reviews away from doing the next Hit Me As Hard As You Can. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this episode that we do here. You might find this intriguing. What we have promised, folks, is if we get 10 reviews on iTunes, we will do a new installment, a special episode, which is Hit Me As Hard As You Can, where Tom and I pick films that we think will cause the other person the most pain. Thus far, you have actually done a better job of that than I did, because I would say that if Tom had the chance to be watching Solo or Spice World again, I would say
I would watch Spice World.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
But I can tell you for the next time, I got something special. So please keep reviewing the show. Get us closer.
He's gonna fail again.
I don't know. I know what you hate. So think about that. I just want to say I've got a new article coming up. Oh, you follow me on Twitter at NKOAS, I should say.
At Raging Bull 1990.
At Vice Victus.
That's VYCEVICTUS. Yes. I believe your banner image is still a slave master getting murdered in Amistad.
No, it's actually my annual review of war films from a better perspective. But I should go back probably.
I have a new article coming out that's going to be, should be out by the time this goes up, which is a list article on CBR.com, Sound for Resources, about superheroes that became jokes, ranging in everything from Aquaman, who was once kind of powerful and now everybody laughs at, to characters like Space Ghost and Birdman, who have actually become comedic characters. So that's what I'm going to plug, Tom, if you want to plug.
I don't know if it'll be out by the time this episode drops, but the piece I'm working on now is franchises that peaked with the first movie. Suffice to say, Solo will not be on the list.
Thank God. Normally, you guys know, we normally throw out a plug for something else that's, you know, that we love, another podcast, another album, whatever. But we're going to give our guest, Vice Victus, a chance to plug something that he really loved that he thinks people are missing out on. So,
Well, first I'll just say I plug myself. My next article will be the review of The Predator coming out later this year. That'll be on boombus.net, so please check out me on my shows just there. And as far as anything else, you know what? Right now, I'm into the DreamWorks Netflix Voltron series. It's made from the same creators of the Avatar Last Airbender series, you know, Legend of Korra, so it's a pretty high up there quality of pedigree there. And it's just fun. It's just relaxing. It's not too serious, but there is like heart and gravitas to it. But it's just, you know, it's giant robots fighting monsters in space, and it's well made, it's well thought out, and it's way better than that crappy, mangled, poorly dubbed, poorly remembered nostalgia wank fest, which is the 80s cartoon that I think of. Forget that. I wish I had this cartoon when I was a kid, this new Voltron, it's great. Just give it a try.
All right, and just to give you guys an idea, what we're doing next episode, we're back to our usual format. I'm picking a film for Tom. Tom's picking a film for me. I am going to have Tom watch a classic comedy. Tom has never seen a movie by the Marx Brothers, so we are going to be talking about Duck Soup.
And I'm going to keep the trend up this week. It's going to be another lighthearted romp. I'm going to pick 1971's Straw Dogs by Sam Peckinpah. If you ever wanted to laugh at what Dustin Hoffman thinks is a happy marriage.
Oh, God. All right, so we will see you guys next time for this fun mix.